From Capital Broadcasting Company and WRAL.com, this is The Wrap at NC Capital.
Good afternoon. Welcome to The Wrap. I'm Laura Leslie, WRAL Capital Bureau Chief.
And I'm Travis Fain, WRAL State House Reporter.
And it's been another one of those stop-and-go kind of weeks, the legislature. I was out last week. Sorry, there was no wrap. But we seem to be going to these one-day sessions. I think we've mentioned this before. And, you know, it used to be like 2 days, and now they're down to pretty much 1 day of work as we're waiting for that budget to surface or not surface, depending. And Travis, you had kind of a story about that this week.
Yeah, I think we're kind of past the time, 2 months after the fiscal year began, and it's September. They started in January to start asking, you know, hey, guys, you know, could you get this done? And there are some impacts to not having it done. And one of them, I think, is if you look to the prisons, you know, we've all had a chronic vacancy rate there for years and years and years, and you don't have to use much imagination to figure out why. It's not that great of a job, particularly when there's a pandemic. And wages rising outside the prison walls, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things that prison guards have asked for years, correctional officers have asked for years, is a pay scale, you know, more like troopers or other law enforcement, where they can or teachers expect raises every year and they don't have one. Well, they would under this budget. They would also get air conditioning, you know, like NCCIW, that's the women's prison here in Raleigh. Largely on air conditioning. Can you imagine going to work every day in the summer in Raleigh, North Carolina, and there's no air conditioning? Plus, you got to wear a mask. So they're not great conditions, and they would be made better by the budget, but we don't have a budget. You know, we the House and Senate still have not gotten to where they have worked out their agreement fully. It sounds like that's kind of coming in the next few weeks. And then the real negotiations begin, because the governor has to sign this thing to get a budget, essentially.
Right. And they haven't even been sort of triaging this with him as they go. That was, I think, what Berger told us on Wednesday. And he sounded like, I mean, the word mini budget came out of his mouth again.
Yeah. And I mean, some of that may be a response to things like prisons, where, you know, there is just widespread agreement. Yeah, we need to do this. And because it's caught up, and, you know, what conversations really are happening? It sounds like the conversations with the governor are fairly surface right now. I mean, that's kind of have to read between the lines, right? As all three sides talk. The governor today at a bill signing, he mentioned the budget and he said, you know, we will be negotiating with the House and Senate. Then he kind of backed up and says, and we have been. So, you know, that probably means fairly surface conversations, as opposed to anybody pounding their fist on the desk and really making it clear the red lines are.
We were told today, or Wednesday, I should say, that Berger and Moore have agreed on a tax package, but neither is willing to say out loud what those tax cuts or changes may be in advance of the budget. So maybe we'll hear more about that next week, but I kind of think they're going to try to roll the whole thing out at one time.
Yeah, and supposedly chairs of various subcommittees, they're getting together now, and I don't know.
That for a month.
I really think we're close this time, Laura.
Sure. I'll hold that football, okay?
That's right.
In the meantime, though, there were some things that they got done today in their one-day, rather furious, fast and furious session. The Senate especially picking up a lot of stuff, one of which is one that we've reported on quite a bit, and that's the North Carolina High School Athletics Association bill. That was the final vote on Wednesday. No surprise, it passed along the same lines that it passed last week. It is now headed for the House. It'll be interesting to see what the House does with it, because this is one that came out of the Senate. And, I don't know what the thinking in the House is on this. Do you know?
No, I don't. I don't think I've asked around on that one.
Some other ones we're kind of keeping track of. The ABC omnibus bill passed the Senate and the House both on Wednesday. It passed the Senate after the changes were made, and then it passes concurrence vote in the House, and it's now on the way to Governor Cooper. Lots and lots of changes in that bill. I was thinking about this, like I remember maybe 10 years ago, and you'd be covering an attempt to change one thing about alcohol sales or alcohol service, and that would take years to get through, and it would be like maybe one or two changes, right? And this was just like a chunk of like 30 of them all at one time, and people barely even raised an eyebrow.
Yeah, and I don't know, are omnibuses just the easier route on that, or if people have given up the fight, or you know, society has just changed enough that that it makes better sense now for people when they look at the poll numbers. But yeah, quite a few changes that kind of loosen things up. Well, you're going to be able to buy more drinks in a football game or baseball game or whatever game you go to, right?
Well, yeah, so you can buy two at a collegiate game, assuming they sell liquor or mixed drinks or beer. You can buy two instead of one, which is actually, for those of us who have gone and tried to buy one, the lines are so long that honestly, there's a lot of sense to letting people buy two at a time. So you're not spending like literally half your game standing there in a 30-person line. Yeah. There's and also it would allow online sale of alcohol by ABC. So you'd still have to go to the ABC store and pick up your purchase and show your ID when you do that. But instead of going to the ABC store, you could simply go online and buy stuff and, you know, select it that way. And so this is one of those things it's kind of hard to believe that we don't have that. I mean, just about everybody has that, but now if the governor signs it, and I see no reason to think that he wouldn't, we will have that as well.
Yeah. And I think there's also some outdoor drinking, loosening of those rules.
And distilleries. This was a big one. I remember when they were fighting to get distilleries allowed. And part of it was they could only sell one bottle to you if you had taken a tour of the distillery. Well, now we've thrown the tour out the window. They can sell a bottle to whoever they want. And they can sell it on Sunday, which is the day of the week, of course, that the ABC stores are closed. But there are an awful lot of, let's say, sports events that happen on Sundays. And so, you know, that's a huge change to allow liquor to be sold in the state on Sunday. And again, that got like almost no debate.
Yeah. One thing that, that did get some bait, the emergency powers bill, reining in what the governor can and can't do there. And where did that one end up? Where is that one?
That one
is still in the pipeline, isn't it?
Right. It's in the House. So it passed the Senate. On party lines, you know, despite the Republicans' argument that this is something that all lawmakers should favor because the executive branch shouldn't have as much power as it does to simply close things down. The bill did kind of go a long way in terms of really strictly limiting what the governor and the Department of Secretary of Health and Human Services can actually do. It's in House right now. I think they sent it to a committee. I'm not entirely sure. You know, this is a tough time for optics for that. With COVID back on the rise and ICUs overflowing, we see all these, you know, these stories about the hospitals being absolutely maxed out, right? Just sort of subsumed in a wave of COVID patients. Seems like a really strange time to move to restrict the governor's ability to issue orders regarding public health.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll move forward anyway and get vetoed. The real question is whether or not it's going to be in the budget, right? When the House and Senate present what they've got to the governor, how much of that policy will be in there. And this reminds me, I don't remember if it was this week or last week, but I was kind of needling Berger a little bit, Senator Berger, on that, about basically saying, look, if you put this in there, the governor's going to insist that you take it out, that it's going to gum up the works. And he looked at me and said, well, you know, if you know what's going to be in the budget, Travis, I wish you'd tell me. So I took that as an indication that it is not necessarily a fait accompli that policy provisions like that, poison pills for the governor. I mean, it's not a poison pill if you like it, but for Roy Cooper, it is.
Absolutely. And if they're serious about really wanting to get a budget passed this year, I think that kind of stuff is an indication that they're not.
Yeah, I think that's fair analysis. And so I just don't know whether we should expect to see it or not. That's real helpful information for everybody, right? Like, I don't know.
Well, we'll see. And in the meantime, of course, the governor signed a couple of bills today, and those are on, that was one of them was the anti-shackling bill that has to do with appropriate care for pregnant women and new mothers that are in the penal system, allowing visits with a newborn, for example. There's a whole lot, and shackling, of course, which of course we've heard from a long time that the Department of Public Safety has a policy that women are not to be shackled while they're in labor, but we understand that sometimes that has not been adhered to. So this would actually put it in the law. And you were at that signing this morning, Travis.
I was. And you know, the shackling of pregnant women is something that I think we have generally thought is very uncommon, but I'm not so convinced of that anymore. A federal lawsuit was filed earlier this year about one case. I met this morning a doctor who was in tears almost remembering a woman who had been brought in from a local jail to deliver. And would not, the deputies would not remove the shackles, even when the doctor begged them to. I know there were a couple of cases reported in 2018 that we didn't have good details on, but that led to a review of policy at the Division of Prisons level. So there was clearly something to it. This enshrines it in law for jails, for prisons. There's some nuance to it, you know, when you can and cannot shackle a woman in her particularly third trimester. It also guarantees visits with the baby after the baby is born. The baby can only be so far away from where the mother is. The mother can only be incarcerated so far away from where the baby lives. There's some nutrition standards in here. There's some stuff just for women as far as when men can inspect, you know, like the women's showers, for example. So there are a few protections there that are broader than that. We've hashed out the bill pretty well on NC Capitol, so you can read it there. I think this is interesting because it's part of a continuum of criminal justice reforms that we've seen this year and the last few years. And it really also kind of speaks to the rise and success, I think, at least anecdotally, that I'm seeing in this sort of advocacy, right? Now, a lot of that is fueled by the death of the murder of George Floyd last year and the fact that people were in the streets. And it will be interesting to see how much of that momentum continues in years to come, because I think advocates will tell you there's still quite a bit to do in criminal justice reform. But, you know, there has been quite a bit of success in you know, some of these left-leaning advocacy groups pushing some of their agenda through a Republican-controlled legislature with widespread bipartisan support. I mean, the Shacklin bill passed unanimously. I mean, how anybody can be against that, I don't know. But also Senate Bill 300, we've talked about before, which was a wide police reform bill, that had very widespread support. So you've got the right and the left coming together on these things and agreeing with, in many cases, the far left, even though the far left does not think they go far enough.
Yeah. I did want to mention a couple of potential vetoes that we're waiting on. As we're recording this at about 3:30 on Friday afternoon, we have yet to hear the fate of a couple of bills that we think are probably likely to get vetoed. One of those bills is the anti-rioting bill. That's House Bill 805. That was Speaker Moore's particular bill that he wanted to get passed this year. That one, when it passed, it had only 2 Democratic votes in the House. And then it got no Democratic votes in the Senate. And then when it came back to the House, it got no Dem votes then either. So I think that's correct. But anyway, so clearly there's not a margin that would indicate that that would be overridden if it were to be vetoed. Of course, you know, I mean, there's a lot of backers of the bill who will say, you know, this bill is actually fairly reasonable. We put some safeguards in there to protect people from being sort of scurrilously accused of rioting just for being on the scene of a protest where riots kind of break out. But, you know, you got to look at this in the national context. There have been a lot of these bills across the U.S., and they've been widely perceived to be anti-Black Lives Matter bills, whether they are or not. So I don't see the governor being able to sign that one.
No, I expect him to veto that, and also the critical race, for lack of a better word, phrase, bill that we've talked about many times, restricting how teachers can talk and teach about race and racism and the history of racism in this country in class. Cooper this morning at the bill sign, I asked him about both bills, and he said, you know, action would come down on those this afternoon. But of course, you know, he never says he's going to veto something unless, like, he has to. When I suggested that I expected him to veto both, he just kind of laughed. Read into that what you will, but I, you know, by the time this is posted, I'm sure we'll have stories up on nccapital.com. I just refreshed my email to make sure the word hasn't come down as we take this about
5 o'clock, Travis. 5 o'clock Friday.
Right.
That's how that works. Yeah. We love that in newsrooms. We love 5 o'clock.
And I will mention that, you know, vetoing the riot bill is going to leave that. Everybody seems fairly unhappy with the current law on that, right? Like, it's not clear what a riot is. There's just some unclear definitions. And that once was going to be cleared up in a bipartisan manner in Senate Bill 300. The criminal justice reform bill we mentioned earlier had some rioting language in it that beefed up strengthened the punishment, but also clarified the definition. And that kind of fell by the wayside in favor of the speaker's bill. So work to do there. Who knows if they'll come back to that issue or just leave it for another session.
And then one more thing that we did not mention, the redistricting hearings kicking off this week. Mm-hmm. And that was a big one. You know, this is the set of hearings that they're having before they start rolling out maps. So these are the public's chance to comment on the idea of maps. on what they would like the maps to look like. Interestingly enough, but there's going to be these meetings and one meeting in each of the 13 congressional districts this during the rest of this month. And then they're not going to have any more meetings around the state after the maps come out. So it seems like it should be the other way around, maybe. But anyway, that's what's happening. Now, it's very interesting to me that these meetings are not being streamed online. And Common Cause pointed out something about that the other day as well. I mean, you know, they're able to stream pretty much everything that happens at the legislature. One would think that they might be able to stream these meetings as well, or at least, you know, put them on Facebook, even if not, you know, something that's of, you know, some kind of high tech production. But that's not in the plans for right now.
Yeah, and also there was some consternation in Durham because one or two of their hearings are being held on Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
Which is a Jewish holiday where you're not supposed to, you're not going to be out and about going to a redistricting hearing, basically.
Yeah.
So I know that causes some concern in Durham. I will point out, though, that, you know, you can make these comments in writing. You can submit them through a portal on the legislative website at any time.
But so there is something to be said to going in and speaking on your own, because when you send those comments into a portal, you know, you don't know if anybody read them. Right. I mean, at least when you speak it, you know that they had to listen to you, even if they're not looking at you. Right. At least you were there. Right. You're on the record. So, I mean, I do understand the frustration, you know, but it is a difficult thing, especially with COVID right now, you know, to sort of manage these sorts of meetings. It is hard for me to understand anyway why they're not being live streamed, but I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Also, the Leandra case is kind of heating back up again. We haven't talked about this yet, have we?
We haven't.
The judge said basically, he had said earlier that he wasn't going to force anybody to do anything as far as increasing school funding in the state as a result of this, almost 30-year-old lawsuit at this point. But he seems to be walking that back a bit as the budget takes forever to pass, saying that if by mid-October the legislature hasn't funded schools adequately across the state, he'll do something. It's not clear what. It's a threat, but not a threat.
You would sort of look into options to force them to comply with what he rules for them to do. But I mean, it's been a long time coming, and it doesn't look like it's on the verge of coming either. But in the meantime, you know, we heard from Speaker Moore and Senator Berger this week just sort of saying that they're extremely doubtful that he has the authority to actually make them spend money. So, you know, it's that, you know, and judges in other states have actually fined legislatures. They've held them in contempt. So I'm not sure where this is going to end up. At least we won't know probably for another month or so.
Yeah. And I don't see how it rests just with this judge. I mean, presumably that would be appealable. I don't want to get too far out of my depth because, I mean, it's something that's gone up and then is back down, and how that affects the appeal process, I'm not entirely certain. So maybe I'll just stop talking about it, but it is, of course, billions of dollars on top of the billions we already spend on education in North Carolina. So it's a really big deal. And I don't, it's not one where the prospect of continued legal action seems to have softened anyone's opinion on it.
Yeah. I think that's about it for this week. Anything else I've missed that you can think of?
I think that's all good for the order. Sorry we didn't do one last week. Sometimes we get to Fridays and it's just, no Moss. I'm sorry.
My brain full.
And that is what happened with last week's wrap. So apologies to folks who missed it, but we'll keep coming at you the best we can.
Absolutely. And we'll definitely keep you posted on what happens next week here on The Wrap. Thanks for joining us.
This podcast is a production of WRAL.com, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. If you like the show, we'd appreciate you giving us a review and sharing it with your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app.